Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. We are coming at you with another live edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. And I disconnected my Skype from Facebook. We should not have any problems tonight. I actually checked on today. And, you know, go figure, it was something like wicked simple. And I just click one button and you're done. And I went and spent $40 on a separate broadband card that wouldn't even work on my other computer. Then I come and look at Skype and I look up the help and I find out it's a one-click fix. And so I had it disconnected from Facebook all day today, and it never once disconnected until about 10 minutes before the show. And then I just restarted my computer. And hopefully it'll stay on that long again. And we have Psychic Tom.
Good evening. All right.
We should have no interruptions tonight. We don't have a guest. I was balls to the walls busy this week with the lumberjack thing, so I didn't get to book a guest, but we'll definitely have somebody next week, and I did want to do a one-time test on this to make sure that we don't get disconnected before we get a new guest. Anyway.
So what was funny is the other night, I remember we were going to try to do that redial on a Tuesday night. I ended up a friend of mine's house, and I was like, when the hell are they going to call me? Then I'm like, when I finally got home, they're like, okay, we're not going to do it. I'm like, I was moving Halloween shit that night. But what was really funny was, I guess it was on Sunday, I get an email, and you're like, saying, yeah, that's no problem. I said, did I send an email? I was at a wedding on Saturday night, and I really didn't want to be there, so I decided to drink and smoke as many cigars as possible. And I somehow got my... are you ready for this? How many champagne toasts do you think I did the other night?
Too many.
Tell me the number.
Four.
Four. Psychic Con, you're the psychic. How many do you think I did?
Lucky number seven.
You guys could add your numbers together. Still
12? Wow.
I did a dozen. And I smoked 3 cigars. So apparently I came home to watch the fight, and I must have got your email and responded.
And you didn't remember?
No. Hey, I wasn't driving. What do I care?
I couldn't notice in the text. It wasn't slurred speech. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, one thing you will notice is like when I am drunk, I am very grammar conscious. I did send one text message that had some screwed up letters in it. But no, mostly with my drunk emails, they're like, oh, you were drunk? I'm like, yeah, not a word misspelled and not a punctuation miss.
Well, there you go. That's kind of like the way I play basketball when I'm drunk.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're not watch anytime soon. Evander Holyfield finally decided he's going to retire. Probably enough TMZ caught him at the airport and started this whole thing. He said to them that he's never going to box again, and apparently now tomorrow he's going to announce his retirement from boxing. And it's his 50th birthday as well tomorrow. So, the real deal.
Well, now I just seen a blurb on ESPN that said that now he's thinking of not going through with his retirement.
Oh, really?
Yes, that was just as of 10 minutes ago, fresh off the press. And he turns 50 Friday. Yeah, so we'll see what happens.
Well, he did tell Sports Illustrated, I'm 50 years old and I pretty much did everything that I wanted to do in boxing. And that's what he says. But his record is 44-10-2, and we were supposed to have Ray Mercer on a few weeks ago, and he was supposed to fight him in South Africa next year or later this year. I forget what the actual date was supposed to be, but I never saw a cancellation on that, so that's why it really puzzled me when I didn't hear this news this week. But of course, you know, he has had a very illustrious career, heavyweight champion, and beat a lot of tough guys, George Foreman, Riddick Bowe, James Douglas, Larry Holmes, and Mike Tyson, of course, even though he's missing part of his ear. Well, I guess it wasn't his. He got it reattached, but he definitely has a big scar.
That was just not even title fights. You know, fight with Michael Doakes, tremendous fight. When he was the way he had, the first fight with Dwight Muhammad Cowley was a brutal affair. The fight with Ray Mercer, not a title fight, was, you know, a very tough fight. And then he had the two fights with Michael Moore. He lost the first one. That's when they saw he had the heart problem. Apparently it was from some medication for a shoulder injury. And then he knocked Moore out in the rematch. Had the two fights with Lennox Lewis. The first fight, obviously, the bogus draw, which everybody except two of the three judges thought Lewis won clearly. And in the second fight, a lot of people thought Holyfield won that, but it was almost like he was getting punished from the first fight.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. But that's one of the little news tidbits here. Then we're going to go right to the UFC here. A little blurb about, of course, the Ultimate Fighter 16. There's a lot of Ultimate Fighter news this week, but this is the worst yet. They've had, last week was their lowest rated episode ever, period, as if it couldn't get any lower from the past reports, but they only had 624,000 viewers, which is 150,000 below their previous bottom mark, and 475,000 less than last week's episode, which is so good.
Wow.
This is only so good. It was right after UFC on FX5, so a lot of people just tuned in and stayed tuned in. You know, Roy Nelson and Shane Carwin are the coaches, and they're not very dynamic characters. I mean, Roy's kind of funny and weird and unusual the way he approaches a lot of things, but he's pretty low key, laid back. So is Shane Carwin. It's not like these guys really hate each other all that much, and they're talking smack like the Ultimate Fighter with Bisping and Mayhem Miller, which is one of the stories we didn't get to talk about last week. But Mayhem Miller went even crazier than he already did before he got arrested not too long ago, and he walked off the MMA Hour show with Ariel Helwani last week. So that was another one of those stories. But anyway, get back to the Ultimate Fighter. The next season probably will get higher ratings because they announced this week that it's going to be John Jones coaching against Chael Sonnen. So that will be entertaining for sure. Even though Chael Sonnen already got his TV time on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which I had missed. He was supposed to be replacing somebody on the show. And that was really ironic to me because I used to say he looked a lot like Mac on that show. And that was when I was surprised that I thought he looked like Mac, and they ended up making him somebody else. Yes. Another character. So that was kind of funny. But anyway, Chael Sonnen and John Jones. And I guess Dan Henderson was pretty pissed about it. I didn't read the story, but I did read a headline about Henderson was very pissed about them doing that, because he's supposed to be next in line for the title whenever he's good. So we'll see. So we know he's got a big mouth. So if anything, that will draw more viewers. And he does have a good team that he works with. He's actually on Dan Anderson's team. So they're very familiar with him. Anyway, Dana White said that the number of viewers on Tough 16 isn't as important for the show than drawing strong numbers in key advertising demographics. But more people watch the TBS overnight movie at 4 a.m. than tuned in for Tough. and they couldn't even draw 0.3 in the 18 to 49 category this week.
Woo! Wow.
So, the Ultimate Fighter is sucking. Even though I thought there were some pretty good fights.
Yeah, I'm not seeing the quality of dropping off to, you know, the extent that would justify those ratings. I'm kind of at a loss for words. I don't know what to say about it.
Right?
Yeah. I don't either. I really think it has a lot to do with the station and the time and day. I think that there's some demographics that FX probably doesn't have as many subscribers as Spike. All right, we're back. I don't know where I left off there. It was like the 14:45 mark. Everything froze. Skype was still connected, but my computer just froze. Are you there, Tony?
Yeah.
I can barely hear you.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep. There you are. So I was talking about Thomas Adamek versus Steve Cunningham rematch. And I don't know how much everybody heard, but I was trying to explain that when they first fought, me and the guest commentator, Patrick something, slipping my
mind. We could have had a job that night. I mean, that was back in, I guess, December of 08. It's about 4 years.
Right.
And I now have a webcam on my computer. I have no idea how to use it. But at the time, you had the webcam. I didn't. I mean, I remember you turned your webcam like towards the TV, so it was focused on the TV. And then as we were watching it, we were doing the commentary. And Steve gets knocked out in the second round. Obviously, I know Steve from Philadelphia. We had interviewed Steve. He's a hell of a nice guy. I've talked to him on several occasions at the fight. And Steve goes down, and he actually got knocked down 3 times that fight. He was on the first time. I remember, okay, come here. Oh, shit. I'm like, I would definitely need more training before I ever did a broadcast on, like, ESPN or HBO.
Yeah, it was Patrick McGilligan. This is a boxing historian.
Yeah.
He was third bill on that show.
You know what else I learned about myself that night, which is I always saw myself as more of a color commentator. You know, the guy with the little quirks and the guy like that brings color to the broadcast. I was more of play-by-play that night. Like, when the fight started, I was like, okay, you know, we got Cunningham moving in, you know, trying to establish his jab. And I was doing more, and you guys are providing the color. I don't know how that happened, but this did. Aside from my oh shit comment, of course.
Yeah. That was a different kind of color.
Yeah.
But they're fighting this time in your home state of Pennsylvania. They're fighting in Bethlehem. And I don't know how far that is from you, but I'm guessing it's probably a hike.
No, Bethlehem's only about 30 minutes.
Oh, really?
Well, I can get to Bethlehem in less time than it would take me to get to a fight at in Philadelphia, like Blue Horizon or the Asylum or any of those places. The time is almost cut in half. It's just about time for my house. I just jump right on the Northeast Extension, and boom, about 15 minutes, get off, 15, 20 minutes, get off in Allentown, and go right from there. In fact, I probably wouldn't even have to get on the extension. I'd climb right up 309, and because that's when I go to Eagles training camp every year, it only takes me about 30 minutes, and that's in Bethlehem.
Well, maybe we can get you some press credentials for this one. It's actually going to be on NBC as part of the main event series that they're doing on their Fight Night series, NBC Sportsnet. And it's going to be December 22nd, so exactly 11 days. and 4 years after their first meeting on December 11th, 2008. And,
it's... 22nd is a Saturday, right?
Saturday? I don't know.
December
22nd. Wait a second. It should be
Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday.
I'll have to look at my schedule for that. I usually book my December up pretty busy, but I would like to go to that. Maybe if I can possibly work it out, I could work maybe a day shift that day, hauling trees, and then get off for the night and shoot up there. Maybe I'll work like an 8 to 4 shift, go home, shower, and head up to Bethlehem. See, I'm always thinking ahead of time.
Well, Adamek is 47-2 with 29 knockouts, and Cunningham is 25-4 with 12 knockouts. It's definitely going to be a good fight. If the first fight is any indication, and they've got a little extra pounds these days, these heavyweights. So it'll be a different dynamic there, I'm sure. And I've been waiting for this rematch for a long time. I wanted it right after the fight.
remember, I think both of us signed a petition for a rematch.
Yeah.
Steve Cunningham and people have signed a petition for a rematch. So there's a few things that concern me a little bit going into this rematch. May 1st, 2008, obviously, Cunningham would have won that fight if not for the 3 knockdowns. The knockdown in the second round, he was winning the round, he gets knocked down. And then that round shifts to Adamek. The 4th round, he's winning that round, he gets knocked down, it shifts to Adamek. The 6th round, I didn't think he was going to survive. Because he got hit and his whole body froze before he hit the canvas. But as the fight, after that 3rd knockdown in the 6th round, I believe it was 7th or 8th. But I know we got knocked down 3 times, and they were all even rounds. So it might have been the 2nd, 4th, and 6th, or 2nd, 4th, and 8th. But after that, then Cunningham completely took over. And in that 12th round, he was hitting Adamek's bomb. It should have knocked down anybody. But Adamek has got a solid chin. Even Klitschko, Vitaly Klitschko, could not put him down. He knocked him down, but he never really put him down. You know, the fight was stopped with Adamek at his feet. The guy's got a good chin. Cunningham does not have a good chin. He's been knocked down in the fight with Juan Pablo Hernandez. He's knocked down in the fight with Troy Ross. And especially in the second fight with Hernandez, he was badly hurt when he went down. So Cunningham is more of a boxer, not much of a puncher. So I don't know if the added weight will really help him that much. I think that would be more of a benefit towards Adamek. And I don't know how Cunningham's chin will hold up. As he's gotten a little bit older, he's in his mid-30s now, you can see where his reflexes have gone down just a little bit, and he has been more hittable in his last few fights. So those are going to present some problems for Steve Cunningham. But on a pure skill standpoint, the more skilled of the two fighters. His speed, his reflexes, definitely advantages. Power and chin are his advantages. And it's interesting to see, you know, what kind of fight they're going to wage.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to be tuning in. It's actually going to be at 4 p.m. Eastern that day, which is very good timing for the Polish fans, apparently. Which
it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon?
Seeing it in prime time over there. It's 4 p.m. Well, over here.
That's good and bad. You know, it's good because a chance for boxing to be on in prime time. It's bad because it's going to fuck up my work schedule.
Well, anyway, switching gears again back to UFC. We had UFC 153 over the weekend. And some entertaining fights. Anderson Silva beat the crap out of Stephen Bonner in a weird fight. Bonner came out slugging, and he seemed to be doing really well, but Anderson just kind of shook off his attack and started acting like kind of a jerk. He just stood up against the cage after he was getting beat up against the cage and just waited for Bonner to come back inside on him and then eventually hit him with this beautiful knee to the body. Bonner went down in the fetal position and that was all she wrote. Silver just won.
The only time that Stephen Bonner has ever been stopped.
Exactly. And,
the only time, and if this... If this doesn't say that Anderson Silva's on another level, and the Jones fight has to be made, I don't know what. I just don't know who is left.
I don't see anybody that's going to move it at all. And apparently, they say he's ducking. Who's the guy? He refused to fight with. I'm drawing a blank right now, but
are we talking about Chris Weidman?
And that, to me, I don't know that much about Weidman. I think I might have seen him fight once. That doesn't really intrigue me as much as obviously a Jones fight would. But Silva says that's the last time he's going up to 205, and I don't see John Jones coming down to 185. So,
apparently Dana White's comment was that if he waves enough money under their noses, the fight will be made. So,
if anything is going to catch him, it's got to be his cockiness. Because this time, I've seen him play air guitar in the ring, in the cage before, but this time was very weird how soon he did it and how it worked in his favor somehow. Just standing there with his hands on his hips, basically, waiting for Bonner to come in right where he was getting beat, and then to the point where his corner was yelling at him to stop it. And he looks over his corner, and I don't know if it was Brazilian or English, but it looked like he was saying, hey, I got this under control. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting fight. There's just 20 seconds left in the first round, and it was over. He's a body and punches. And Bonner has come out since the fight and gave him all kinds of credit, of course. And I don't know if he's officially retired yet, but I think that'll be coming.
I don't know, Rich. I can ask you, if you're the matchmaker, what do you do with Silva? What would you do?
I really don't know. I mean, unless you can come up with somebody new that we haven't seen yet in the UFC, some superstar from another league that you can buy out of his contract or wait until he's done with his contract. I mean, I don't even really know enough about the other MMA circuit to tell you who that is.
I just can't think of any names that would stand out. And I think as far as Chris Weidman, he's done everything he's supposed to do at this point. But Ed Soares, Silva's manager, just said that the brain trust doesn't feel that he's done enough to warrant a title shot. So that's why they're just not that enthused about fighting him.
Yeah, I really don't know who else they could throw in there. Unless it's just somebody else that he's already fought. So, what do you do? But anyway, we had a bunch of other good fights. Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira showed that he can still fight at his age. And he beat up a little on Dave Herman, got him with an arm bar.
He beat the guy that said jiu-jitsu doesn't work, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay. And let's see, he beat him with, what did you say he beat him with?
An arm bar.
Something, huh? Ah, okay. I think that's a little something in jiu-jitsu, isn't it? Yeah.
You specifically mentioned this last week that that could get him into trouble.
Yeah.
And it literally did. So he was actually doing very well against the submission attempts up until that point. It's just that for some reason he didn't protect that one that well. But, Nogueira has come out. He wants a top 10 opponent now, and he wants to go for another title, especially. But, I don't know, he's kind of like... He's kind of like screaming after beating the guy that's not really top 10 himself, I don't think, Dave Herman. He's fairly new to the UFC. He hasn't really fought a lot of huge superstars yet. So Nogueira has already fought a lot tougher guys. top 10 fighter after beating this guy. I don't know if he's ready for that. I'd like to see him beat somebody a little better before you see him in there with the top contenders. But we also had second round, Fabio Maldonado losing to Glover Teixeira. John Fitch just sort of dominated Eric Silva there in a unanimous decision. He looked pretty impressive. And we had Phil Davis got an Anaconda two on Wagner Prado. Wagner. But that was in the second round. It was 30 seconds left to go. We had Damian Maya beat Rick Story by neck crank submission. Rony Mariano Bezerra beat Sam Cecilia by TKO in the second round. We had Sergio Moraes beat Rene Forte by rear naked choke submission. That was an interesting fight because Moraes, they were saying that he had a missing piece of his triceps muscle. And it took me a little while to notice that. I mean, they did mention it, but I thought it was the other guy. I kept looking at the other guy, looking for how that would work. And then I saw it, and I was like, wow, that arm is way smaller than the other one. But it was kind of funny because the announcers were talking about, oh, he can't hit as hard with that hand. And he was clocking us with the left hand. And he did all right. I mean, to get a submission like that, rear naked choke, you need good strength in both arms. And for a guy to have that situation in life and still be able to fight like that, it's pretty impressive. So I'd like to see more of him in the UFC there. But also, Gleison Tibau beat Francisco Trinaldo by unanimous decision. Diego Brandão beat Joey Gambino by unanimous decision. Chris Camozzi beat Lewis Keane by unanimous decision. And finally, Cristiano Marcelo beat Riza Madadi by split decision. There wasn't a lot of fireworks until the main event fights. But,
Well, I think that Damian Maya, a lot of the consensus has been that it was his getting in the right weight division, you know, getting down from middleweight to welterweight, but I think it's that's a factor, and also he's got back to his roots, back to what he does best, because at best he was a fair stand-up guy, but on the ground his jiu-jitsu has just always been magic. And I think, you know, we see this in boxing sometimes when a good slick boxer decides he's going to be a puncher, or the other way around, you know, a guy with big power decides he's going to stick and move. And if you get away from your identity, a lot of times it just doesn't work. So I think that with Maya coming back and then John Fitch, wow. I remember I said last week, the longer it went, the better for Fitch. But that was just an exciting Fitch fight, which a lot of people would complain that they hadn't seen in a long time. And wow. I don't know what else I could say. I mean, he was on his game. Well, I think the decision was great. And that 170 division is really stacked now. It's really stacked. So,
and GSP's coming back any minute now.
Yeah, so this is really added to the mix. And I will say with the Maldonado fights, you know, you hear that phrase about a guy that's just too tough for his own good, too brave for his own good. That he needs protected from himself. He earned his money that night. But I really hope to see him again. I mean, and that's the kind of fight that, you know, takes a lot out of a guy, but I know he had to pick up some fans from that effort. That was just above and beyond the call of duty, I think. I mean, I think the ref could have stopped it halfway into the second round, and I don't think anyone would have complained a lot. So I hope we see him again.
Good fights all around. We have to wait until November 10th now for the next UFC contest. And that's going to be on Fuel TV, if you have it. Rich Franklin versus Kung Lee, which I think is a very interesting fight, you know, especially after watching what Kung Lee did to Frank Shamrock. And Franklin has been around just about as long. So it's going to be an interesting fight. We had Kung Lee on. I interviewed him way back when he just started MMA from San Cheryl. And he was very timid. It was like yes and no answers for everything. And then we had him on the show, and he sounded like he was more, this was the second interview, he sounded like he was more into acting than fighting at that time. So now he's back to doing a lot of the fighting. And I think he's had a few ups and downs in the cage, but this is a good test fight for him in the UFC. He was one of those Strikeforce guys to make a smooth transition to the UFC and stick with it. So interesting to see how he develops and if he sticks with it or tries to go back to the movies. His other Strikeforce friend, Gina Carano, is not coming back to MMA anytime soon, looks like.
And it'll also be interesting to see how Franklin does. I just don't think he's really been himself since those two Silva fights, even though he's had some quality wins. But
his style is just too basic. I mean, unless he just trains some different type of boxing, I just don't know how he can improve, because he doesn't really do a lot of the other stuff. He's just 1-2, great punches right at you. And I just haven't seen his game improve in the last few years. And he was really lucky against, was it Chuck Liddell that he broke his arm against and still won the fight?
Yeah, I mean, Chuck was really hurting him in that first round. I mean, Richard's sure a tough guy, and I've always been a huge fan of his, but I'm just kind of wondering where he's going here. You know, I don't really see him getting I don't think there's any clamor for a third fight with Anderson, especially with Silva performing the way he did last week. I mean, does anyone really care to see him and Franklin go at it a third time? So I just don't know where Rich's future is, and I think going to 205, I mean, does anyone want to see him with John Jones either? So I don't know. Be interesting.
Well, going back to a week before, the news that we were starting to talk about before we got disconnected last week, about Jeremy Stevens. Dana White spends the whole day down there at the jail out in Minnesota, where Jeremy Stevens was supposed to fight. And he brought in on a warrant. They thought it was done purposely, but now he's back in Iowa. And he was released yesterday after almost 2 weeks in custody over a 2011 bar fight in Des Moines that Stevens says he was not involved with. And he had a $20,000 bond posted for his release, and a hearing in the felony assault case is scheduled for Monday. Stevens is a 26-year-old native of Des Moines, Iowa, and he was arrested in Minnesota on October 5th on a Des Moines warrant for willful injury and assault causing bodily injury. And it was just hours before his fight. And so I don't think he's going to be paying this Haas guy his bail money back. Ryan Haas bailed him out. It's going to be a while before he gets his money back there. But anyway. The fight actually occurred at Fat Tony's. Our co-host's bar down in Des Moines. You're not Fat Tony, are you, Tony? Stevens and Dustin Bachman, 27, are accused of punching and hitting a man. This is a kind of funny. This article says this, right? I mean, this is the bar fight in question occurred on October 15th. Is the address, and it says Dustin Bachman right in the sentence. And so the next sentence, Dustin Bachman is also accused in the case. Well, you just said that. Anyway, aside from the bad writing there, that's your update on Jeremy Stevens. So hopefully he gets that cleared up. He insists, and Dana White believes him as far as, he wasn't involved in that fight. But, everybody always says that. Especially when you're drinking too much and you get involved in a fight. I mean, you can legitimately not even know that you were in that fight. So I don't know what really happened there, but hopefully that gets straightened out. I hope time.
Yeah. Now, is he admitting to being in the bar and wasn't in the fight, or does he say he wasn't even in the bar?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think he goes that far. not. He didn't throw any punches.
Yeah.
Apparently. There was a lot of criticism of Dana White for stepping in and doing that, trying to, you know, spend the whole day down there when you're supposed to be the president of the UFC, bailing one guy out, you know, trying to get him out of his legal troubles. And, you know, would you see the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, down there trying to get a guy out of jail before an NFL game? I don't think so. You know, like, is Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, going to come down and get one of his Cowboys out of jail for the Eagles?
That might happen. Jerry Jones might get one of the players out of jail because he's going to want to win. But Roger Goodell might get the guy out of jail just to suspend him.
That's true. The Bounty Gate scandal. I think there was another lawsuit filed in that case today. That's a whole other story, but... Yeah, that's just one of those situations where I shake my head and I say, you know, this guy definitely should not be getting to that point where he's, you know, he's a bigwig in the league. You know, you should have people for that to go down there and take care of that for you. You should have a lot better things to do on fight day than try to worry about one guy and getting him out of jail. The guy wasn't even really, he's not really a top contender and a title fighter or anything like that, so it's not going to make or break the card to have him off.
I can appreciate the loyalty, but like you said, delegation.
But anyway, we got to shift gears back to boxing here. Alicia West, we had on the show, I think, a couple times. I know I interviewed her once, and then we had her on the show. She was in action on Saturday, and she moved up in weight. Well, this, I don't know if this was a last week's story or this week. I think it probably was a couple weeks ago Saturday. But, she moved up in weight to face the hard-punching Christina Ruiz in the main event of the card that she fought on in Pomona, California. And the card was the first for recently retired world champion Shane Mosley, who now runs Shane Mosley Promotions. And West skills were good enough to handle Ruiz and also good enough to win the vacant International Female Boxing Association Junior Featherweight title. And she improved to 16-1-3 with the victory. And if you recognize the last name, it's because her father was a professional boxer too, Juan West. And she talked to us about that, how her father got her into the sport. Well, she actually got herself into the sport and kind of surprised her father in the long run, but he helps her out, trains her a little bit here and there. But she came to her own decision to fight, and she does pretty well. But she was able to get it done with two scorecards of 100-90 and one with a 99-91 score. And her last two bouts were in Mexico. But she got back to the United States for this one. What else we got here? More Jeremy Stephens stuff.
I wasn't sure if they were going to stay awake, but we had the part of last week, the Brandon Diaz fight against Alvarado. I heard it was a good fight. Some people complained about the decision, and that the decision of stoppage. Rios won in the seventh round. They said it was pretty competitive. The stoppage made it a little bit premature. Like I said, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to view it.
Yeah, the only stuff I watched for fighting this weekend was the UFC fights there, of course. But let's check what we got for upcoming boxing in a minute here. You know, MMA fights, obviously, we don't have to be so we need to fight. Fairbanks.
You hear about the controversy for the fight this weekend?
Which fights? The ones in Brooklyn?
The one up in I guess it is Brooklyn, the main event, the Dana Garcia Eric Morales fight, which was going to be for the junior welterweight title that Garcia originally won from Morales. Morales tested positive for a banned substance, and it is now no longer a title fight.
Oh, I did not hear about that.
Yeah, I just saw that a couple hours ago.
That's interesting because it must not have been a banned substance that would result in a suspension or anything, because then they wouldn't let him fight, right?
Yeah.
Well, what was it, Tony? Did you hear what the banned substance was?
Let me see if I can find out. I did see, but I was in here while I was in the middle of doing something else. So, let's see if I can find here.
Well, that's a pretty stacked card, too. I guess for some reason they don't have a lot of big title fights or big fight cards, period, in Brooklyn. And they're billing this as like a big return of boxing to Brooklyn.
It says right here, the Mexican legend tested positive for a substance on the United States anti-doping list. Although the exact substance is not known at this time.
Don't know what that could be.
Yeah.
Maybe we should call Lance Armstrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know they're cracking down so much on any performance enhancing drugs now. I mean, almost anything. Because you got to be careful taking a multivitamin anymore these days.
Oh, yeah.
Because I said, I know my friend Rogers Nicaragua, he had a fight that was for the F title, and it got ruled a no contest because he had taken something with ephedra in it, which is a weight loss supplement. And I remember, like, when ephedra first hit the market, right after I was getting out of college, and the one product was coming out, and it was supposed to be like, oh, this great new product for losing weight, and I think it was Metabolite or something it was, and I'm going back 13, 14 years. And then shortly after that, a lot of people, like they were saying, there were problems with people having strokes or people having heart problems from it. So ephedra became banned. So then Metabolite tried to, remarket itself with Metabolite ephedra free, and basically all it was like 100 pounds of caffeine in there. And just trying to, I guess, get your heart rate up or whatever that way. Obviously, they went from, like, $50 a bottle to, like, $10 a bottle. And it's, like, one of those things that you see on, like, Walmart, like, shelves now that people just walk right past. Like, oh, it's a piece of shit. And I always said, with certain types, and obviously I'm not a kinesiologist, and I don't understand, certain drugs and the way they interact with the body. I know they had the big thing with Mark McGuire, which is really how a lot of it started back in the late 90s with the Balco, and Roger Clemens was involved in it, Barry Bonds was involved in it, on the Major League Baseball. So that's when they really started bringing these, products in on this banned list, this anti-doping banned list. But what always kind of confuses me a little bit on certain sports, and especially sports like baseball and football and stuff like that, if somebody took something that, ends up being something that's more like a weight loss supplement, I really don't understand how that's giving them an extra advantage. In a sport like boxing, mixed martial arts,
I
can see that because there's a weight class, and by maybe you taking a product that helps you lose weight faster. Like, say you and I were going to fight. We were going to fight for the national title at 185. And I'm fighting the whole season. I'm around 195, 200. And I take these few pills and helps me cut all this weight. That gives me an advantage over you. But when you get a guy like, I'm going to give any professional baseball player out there, a guy like Miguel Cabrera, triple point of the year. If it comes out where it says, oh, he took a pill that had ephedra in it, we're going to wipe away his triple crown win. That sucks because basically that pill really did not, in a way, enhance his performance that much. It didn't, you know, give him 24-inch biceps and he's cranking the ball, you know, 100 feet over the fence.
Yeah, some of this stuff is nickel time. And, you know, just, like I said, you can find it, sometimes it's not even in the ingredients of a supplement. And you find out later that it's in there. I remember Sean Shirk, we had him on, and we talked about how he tested positive after his fight with Hermes Franca, and he swore it was one of his supplements. And he had them tested. He had actually Zion supplements tested, and they came out positive for some kind of banned substance. And I actually had gone into a PNC when Zion was still sold there, and the stuff that he said that had the banned substance in it was no longer being sold there at that GNC. The guy didn't have any clue as to why. Well, probably because it had a banned substance in it and they had to recall it. But they didn't tell anybody about it. So it does happen. And I know that Chris Cyborg there got suspended over something. She says she took it a supplement. So it happens in both women's MMA and male fighters. You know, they get caught up in that stuff. And this boxing match not being canceled over it, but them still taking the title opportunity away is kind of a weird thing. I don't recall any situation like that other than a weight issue. So that makes me think that maybe it has something to do with Eric trying to cut weight using something that he wasn't supposed to. But anyway, that is a stacked card. I mean, if I was in Brooklyn, I would be there. Because there's only two fights on the card where there's people you might have never heard of. Everybody else on this card has an impressive record, and then most of them have been around for a long time and are true veterans. There's only two six-rounders on the card, and that's Eddie Gomez, who's 10-0 with 7 knockouts, versus Saul Benitez, who's 1-2 at light middleweight. And Yano's boy, Boyd Melson from West Point, is fighting at light middleweight, a six-rounder. He's 10-1 with 4 knockouts. He's fighting Jason Thompson, who's 5-6-1 with 4 knockouts. And Boyd, we put on the blog from time to time stories about him because not only is he a captain in the Army, but he's also somebody who gives his fight purses to charity for spinal cord injuries. So we always highlight his efforts. But anyway, starting off with the veterans, we got a welterweight fight between Luis Collazo, who's 31-5 with 16 knockouts. I haven't seen him fight in a long time, but he's fighting Steve Upshur Chambers, who's 24-1.
I know Steve is a very good prospect out of Philadelphia. This is a nice step up for him. Steve is the younger brother of heavyweight contender Eddie Chambers. I've covered a couple of Steve's fights. I've been watching him fight probably since around 2004, 2005. He's a southpaw. He's got long arms. And he's getting a lot of punching power. He's more of a combination guy. He's not a guy that's going to start you with one punch, but more like accumulation, and I use his quick hands to take you out. But nice step up for Steve. Luis Collazo is still a you know, very tough, very crafty fighter out there. Never forget the tale he gave to Ricky Hatton a few years ago. A lot of people thought he beat Ricky Hatton, and you know, basically, you know, he didn't get the decision.
Well, that's one of three 8-round fights. And there's also another welterweight contest between Dmitry Salida, who's 34-1-1 with 18 knockouts, fighting Brandon Hoskins, who's 16-2-1 with 8 knockouts. And I think Salida's the definite veteran in this one, but I don't know that much about Hoskins. I haven't seen him fight or even heard his name before, so maybe he's better than his record shows, but we'll see. We also have a middleweight 8-rounder between Danny Jacobs, who's 22-1 with 19 knockouts, very high percentage there, fighting Josh Lugarin, who's 13-1, 9 knockouts. And then we get to the title fights, even though the main event is not a title fight now. We have 12-rounders now. Devin Alexander, 23-1 with 13 knockouts, fighting Randall Beetle Bailey, who's 43-7 with 37 knockouts. And I don't think that's the real nickname. Randall just got off a real impressive knockout on Friday Night Fights, and it was just a beautiful fight.
We had that unbelievable knockout over Philadelphia's Mike Jones
right. On
the Hacking Bradley undercard. Undefeated prospect, and in a fight that he was losing and completely obliterated him with one destructive uppercut. I got to see Randall fight live back about 10 years ago in Reading, Pennsylvania on an HBO card, and he took a pretty solid Colombian fighter and knocked him out cold with one right. It was one right hand, and he blasted the guy to the point where the whole crowd went silent for a few minutes, like, oh, shit, is this guy going to get up? And so, obviously, Randall's the older fighter. Now, if I was working Devin Alexander's corner in this fight, I would suggest work the body. I've seen Randall get hit and hurt with body shots. The only danger in that is because he is such a tremendous puncher, you put yourself in harm's way to do it. So you got to be smart, and what I would suggest would be, you know, those should have jab, dip, pivot to the side, so when you're out of danger, rip two body shots, and then pivot out of there. You know, so you're sticking and moving. That's the definition of sticking and moving. Alexander can outbox him, but that's the thing. If he gets hit, he's going to be, you know, in deep shit. It's just the honest to God truth. So he's really going to have to practice on hitting and not getting hit. And that would be the best thing. Faint, jab, hit the bottom, pivot out, and get the hell out of there.
Yeah, that's going to be a good fight, I think. I like Bailey's chances in that one. I think he's definitely a game fighter. And Alexander does only have the one loss, but he's got a low knockout percentage. Bailey has 37 of his 43 wins by knockout. That's very impressive. Has lost 7 times and knocked out 3 times himself. But I think he's going to step up for this one and really show people that he's sticking around for a while. And we've got a couple undefeated guys going at it for the WBO middleweight title, another 12-rounder, middleweights. Hassam Ndamukong. I don't know what kind of name that is, but he's 27-0 with 17 knockouts, and he's fighting Peter Quillen, who's 27-0 as well with 20 knockouts. So very even records. Quillen is obviously the more recognizable name. But you never know. This could be.
Obviously, I don't know the opponent very well, but I do know Peter Quillen. Peter Quillen is rapidly ascending. He's a rapidly ascending star. His last fight, I don't know if he's had one since, but he had a comprehensive victory over Winky Wright, who was a highly accomplished fighter, possible future Hall of Famer. And Peter Quillen just, you know, pretty much handled him with ease. He's got knockout wins over Jesse Brinkley. So we're talking about a guy who fought good competition, and he's decisively beaten good competition. And I think that is what's going to carry him to his first world title this weekend.
The WBO middleweight title. And then the top two fights here. First one is the co-main event here. Paulie Malignaggi is 31-4. Fighting Pablo Cesar Cano, who's 25-1-1 with 19 knockouts. And Malignaggi, he's only got 7 knockouts for his 31 wins, so chances are if he wins, it's going to be a decision. It's for the WBA World Welterweight title, by the way.
Paulie's the guy that's like, you know, in fact, I think his last win was via knockout, like a 9th-round knockout. You know, Paulie just stopped somebody. I know we've had some hand problems, and I mean, back in the day, you know, like, oh, he has a punching power. He's like, let me punch you in the face. You'll see how hard I hit. And you get like, all fired up about it. But the fact of the matter is, this guy's not a puncher. Paulie wins fights because he uses quick one-twos and he's got fast feet. So it's like, just like I was saying fight Randall Bailey, it's like, one-two move. You know, boom, boom, move. Get on the angle. And if he tries to stand in front of a fighter, you know, he doesn't have a good chance. Now, I did read an article the other day where Paulie is trying to campaign for a potential rematch with Rick Matten, who beat him a few years ago. And, you know, I know Paulie went into that fight, and you could just tell from the moment or from the get-go, he wasn't focused. So the Buddy the Dirt was so fed up with him, he's like, I'm stopping the fight. You know, like
that was the haircut fight, wasn't it? Yeah, wasn't that the haircut fight?
No, I thought he won the haircut fight.
It was Diaz. It was in Texas, wasn't it? The one that he I think he lost the fight, and his hair was becoming an issue.
Yeah.
Well, no, the fight with Diaz, the first fight with Diaz, Malignaggi should have won. He didn't get the decision. That was not the haircut fight.
That's what it was.
Then he beat Diaz in the rematch convincingly. The fight when he had the hair flopping in his face, I'm pretty sure he won that fight. Let me look at his record, and I'll pick it out. So the Hatton fight, it was, you know, Ricky was fighting him in close. That's the way he fights, you know, trying to maul him a little bit. And Paulie just wasn't able to get off of him, and he wasn't able to do anything. And obviously, you know, not like he was getting beaten up real bad, but he was definitely losing the fight. And McGurk got so frustrated in like the 10th or so round, he kind of like threw the towel in. And Paulie's like, what are you doing? He's like, no, you're not listening to me. You know, you're losing this fight. You know, I'm stopping it. You know, no reason for you to take any more punches. Wasn't like he was taking a bad beating. But let me go, and I'll tell you right now which was the haircut fight. But I'm 90% sure that was a fight he won.
Those who don't remember or know what the heck we're talking about, there was a fight where Paulie had dreadlocks, I think, going in. It looked like shit, first of all, and it was just very, very distracting and aggravating for Malignaggi once he started getting punches thrown at him, and the hair kept going in his face. And I think at one point they cut it off, right?
Right, that's what I was saying. I'd never seen that happen before, and it was between rounds. They had to get the scissors and do just an impromptu haircut.
This is what I put on Wikipedia. Okay, it says on May 24th, 2008, Malignaggi beat Lovemore Endo in a rematch by split decision, and he had originally beaten him a year earlier by unanimous decision, and it was one-sided. You know, they said he just, and I'm reading right here, Lennox Lewis said the original first fight was a boxing clinic. Malignaggi beat him every round. In the rematch, won by split decision, Malignaggi was in control for the first half of the fight, boxing had his faster and crisper jab. Prior to the fight, Malignaggi was sporting hair extensions, which provided me a problem throughout the fight until his trainer, Buddy McGirt, cut them off in the corner between rounds 8 and 9. Malignaggi appeared sloppy second half of the fight as Endo came back to make it close. And it reminds me of something. You guys are going to get a good laugh at my expense. When I was a sophomore in college, and it was the first fight I had that year, I was fighting at Penn State. And I had more of like a mullet hairstyle at the time, you know, business in front, party in the back. But I kind of long, but I decided for whatever reason I was going to wear under my headgear almost like a headband. Not like a do-rag, but like a Bruce Springsteen type of headband to keep my hair out. I don't know why I thought of this, but I did. So now the fight starts, and I literally knocked the guy down with the first punch I landed. They call it a slip. And then I slipped two punches from the guy, and the referee warns me for ducking too low. Because in amateur boxing, you're not supposed to duck down like below the person's waist. I'm short anyway, so anytime I'm ducking, I need to get below a person's waist. So now I've got a knockdown not credited against me, or knockdown not credited for me, I got warned. Then we're still in the first 20 seconds of the fight. And then this guy was like, he was almost throwing slap punches at me. And I looked at him, they call an eight count. So now within the first 40 seconds of the fight, I don't have the knockdown. I had tassels on my shoes. They cut them off. So before the fight started, I got my tassels cut off. I don't get the knockdown. I get warned, and then I get an eight count against me. So now I am flustered beyond belief. The headband slips and is now going over my eyes. I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. So the referee calls break and takes me over to the corner. Dr. Cox was so livid. I thought he was going to punch me in the mouth right there. He's got a headband underneath the headgear, and it wasn't as thick as the Bruce Springsteen one. It was much thinner than that. He literally pulls it down over my face, pulls it out, so he's like almost choking me with it, to cut it off. He's like, if you lose this fight, I'm going to kill you. So within the first minute, within 1 minute, I've had my tassels cut, didn't get the knockdown, got warned. Then I got a standing eight count against me because the guy was like throwing these crazy slap punches and I was like looking at him. And then I got Dr. Cox nearly killing me. Before the fight even started, fight or two before mine, the ropes broke. And it was a floor ring. So they were like, oh, maybe we'll just have the fight with no ropes. And my dad was in the audience. My dad's like, no. He knows I'm a short guy. I depend on cornering guys and just fighting them in close. My dad runs back to his toolbox and literally repairs the ring between, like, the third and fourth fight. It's a mess. So now I'm crawling my way back into this fight. It's sloppy because this guy, he really didn't know how to fight. He would get on his tippy toes and just throw, like, literally open palm slaps. And the referee wasn't, you know, warning him. He wasn't giving. They were not legal punches. They were, like, hitting with the open part of your hand. So now it's coming to the third round. And I started getting a pretty good body attack on him. And the guy's wearing down. And now I get him up against the ropes. And I crack him with a good left hook. And he stumbles back. And I got him pinned on the ropes. So I've been dying to get him the whole fight. I unleash a right hand. The guy turns his back on me. And I clocked him in the back of the head. He goes down to his knees. The referee starts yelling at me for an illegal punch. I'm like, I'm standing in the middle of the ring. I'm trying to go to the neutral corner. The referee's giving me a warning. I'm now in the middle of the ring yelling at the referee. I'm like, dude, he turned his back. He turned his back. What do you want me to do? You know, and then the other judges are like, no. The judges, because he wanted to penalize me, and I think the judges wouldn't accept it because it was obviously not a foul. The other guy should have been penalized. Man. So now, here's my, and this is what started my 17-year feud with Penn State University. I win the fight. After all this crazy shit, I win. I go to the gym on Monday, and the coach goes, you are not going to be happy. Why? He pulls out a copy of the Penn State paper. With their sports reporter, and I use that term loosely, especially because I know what it's like to do journalism with integrity. What the guy wrote was how the fighter from Penn State dominated me throughout the match, scoring a standing eight count, which was true, even though it was a bullshit eight count, until I illegally elbowed him in the head, in the back of the head on purpose. And that I received no penalty for it, and my opponent courageously continued through blurred vision. And after dominating the whole fight, it was my hand raised in victory. I had to be restrained from beating the shit out of the Texas fourth quarter.
All right, now Tony, how did he know you did that intentionally? Did he ask you, and did you confess to doing this intentionally?
Here's how he knew that I did it intentionally. I am not a fan of Penn. This is long before any sexual scandals and all that stuff. I've had a long feud with Penn State University because of the fact that when we used to have the boxing shows, the Penn State team would draw about 800 people to a show. The Lock Haven would draw about 3,000. Give us an advantage of about 2,100 right there. They got, for the first 2 years I was there, 4 shows a year. We got one. And to win a fight in Penn State versus a Penn State fighter would take an act of God. And I remember reading several of these articles from this sports reporter that was basically, here's another one from the same guy. And it was about a Penn State fighter that I went on the beat later in the season. Oh, he just saw a guy from Mansfield who had biceps that would put Hulk Hogan to shame, but he wasn't afraid of him, and he pounded him, and I'm not afraid of anybody. You could tell it was obviously very biased, slanted reporting. So he just can't sit there and write that a punch was thrown and the guy turned his back. That seems cowardice. We have to write that I illegally elbowed him, which I did not. It was a punch to the back of the head. It was not an elbow. It was a punch. And the only reason the punch landed on the back of the head was because the guy turned his head. But he had to slant it to be more pro-Penn State.
Yeah, it's just so presumptuous to say, well, he intentionally hit him in the back of the head. Well, how do you know? You a mind reader?
I mean, yeah. He's not you. He's not a psychic.
That's
I
right. I was just going to say
that.
You know, there's only one psychic around here.
Yeah.
There was Kentucky guys there at the show, but I think I fought a guy when I was at VMI from Penn State on the road. Wasn't near VMI. It was neutral territory, but it was Jesse Bond, and he was notorious with the fouls, throwing out elbows. And he was holding, yeah. And I was the one that got warned, you know. The referees weren't always on top of things, but I think I tried to knee him at some point because I was just getting sick of his crap. We fought a real dirty fight, and that's how he won it. It was a very close contest, but I think I just got so frustrated that I just was losing my mind on the kid.
Yes, I fought Jesse twice. One of the fights I have on YouTube, on my page. The other fight, I've only been able to watch it once since it happened because it still sticks in a pit in my stomach. Our first fight we fought at the Naval Academy back in 1998. It was probably only a week or two after you fought him. And it was a week after I fought out in Reno against Brian Curran and hurt both my hands. So I concentrated mostly on the body because my hands were still sore. Jesse was, you know, fighting in close, a lot of mauling, a lot of holding, you know, but it was an ugly fight, but I won. Okay. So now we're fighting, and it's in the Eastern Regional Tournament. And, you know, we draw each other. So the fight starts, and I did not have a good first round. I'll say that clear as day. First round, I landed some good body shots in there, but he landed a couple crisper, harder shots. He definitely won the first round. But he started fading bad in the second. I was hitting him with body shots, and you could almost hear them thudding throughout the arena. Once again, this is at Penn State because they got the regional tournament every year. That was not fair. They got it every year. So you had to fight on their home turf every year. So, okay. Now, the second round, he's starting to really win down. And now, coming up to the third round, most people thought I won the second round clearly. Come to the third round, I'm tearing into him. I don't think he landed a punch in the third round, and I'm hitting him so hard. Now, I hit him. Now, he's trying to hold me. Now, I crush him with a left hook to the head. He grabs me and then falls. They don't call it a knockdown. They said he went down because he used to do that a lot. He'd get into a clinch, and then he'd take a knee, and it would be like he got wrestled to the ground. No, he was doing that to get a breather, and he would do it if he was ever hurt. So I hit him with a left hook. He grabs me. He falls. I don't think they screwed that one a knockdown. Does it again, goes to the ground. I think that when they did score a knockdown, I still did not get the decision. Now, the one judge what was funny, when the guy passed away, like a year or two later, a couple of years later, Dr. Cox was like, Tony, you were always one of his favorite guys. I was one of his favorite guys. The guy used to screw me, and I can't tell you how many fights. That fight that a lot of people thought I won, two of the judges did not think I won, including this guy, Homer Boone, who had me losing every single round, including the round that I deposited on the canvas, and he didn't even land a punch on me. So, yes, that's where my bitterness towards Penn State comes.
Yeah, home cooking. Hometown cooking.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, and we got all of this just by talking about Paulie Malignaggi's extension.
Right. Well, we missed the story last week. I think someone's in Showtime and their deal expiring. And also, Strikeforce canceled their November event, and they're going to have a blockbuster January event now next. So I think the strategy of the UFC is working. They're kind of choking it off slowly. And once this TV deal is dead, they got to renegotiate another deal. So it's going to be either good timing to roll it into the UFC completely, or, you know, try to keep it going, like however they made the deal to keep it going, until it really dies on the vine, and then they just really fold it. I don't know what's going to happen, which way it's going to go, whether they're going to draw it out and have a new TV deal, or they're just going to use this as an excuse to fold it. But Frank Shamrock's always willing to put his neck out there and talk about it. He did a big interview. And he said he basically sees the UFC picking out the top draws, and they got Alistair Overeem, Nick Diaz, and Kung Lee, which we talked about earlier. And really, the only major star over there now is Gilbert Melendez, and they had to cancel his event because of an injury. So, you know, it's, Shamrock says that's a sign of things to come. But I interviewed Frank a couple times already, so I think we can get him on the show to talk more about this in the future. But something about him staying with the promotion after the UFC bought it made me wonder, like, what kind of deal did they sign here? Because it's obviously very limited as far as what the UFC can do, what Zuffa can do with this new entity. You know, there's got to be something in the fine print that gives Scott Coker some kind of level of control where he knows he's secure. And that's the only reason they sold it that way, and the price that they sold it. So that it kind of can't die as long as Coker wants to keep it alive. They'd have to pay him a lot of money to be willing to kill it, I think. But the fact that Shamrock is still working for them with his beef with Dana White,
mm-hmm,
going on for years and years and years, him trash talking back and forth between Frank and Dana. And the fact that he stayed on the broadcast team told me that, you know, there's something fishy about this contract. They are definitely, you know, in cahoots here as far as, you know, trying to make it stay alive. But it just seems to me like the UFC is working against it as much as possible, just waiting for it to ultimately collapse. But Scott Coker is, hey, and you never know if he's really in control, what he might do to keep it going. But there's definitely, I mean, there's really, there's not a lot of talent over there. And this goes to show you they're trying to fight one last heavyweight fight for both the guys that just won the tournament. And they can't find a guy to fight, what's his name there?
Cormier.
Dan Cormier, yeah.
Cormier, yes.
Can't find anybody for him. Nobody wants to step up. Not even Meathead Mitrione from the UFC. Nobody wants to go back from the UFC to Strikeforce. It's like a step down to the minor leagues in their eyes. So it's kind of unfortunate, but we'll see what happens. Interesting show. Anyway, it's time for a little thing called TNT, and we have a new little opening theme. Next. Tony said when I said it's time for TNT again. But this week, we're going to have Tony and Tom discuss women in the particular sports of MMA and boxing, where they're at, where they're going, and you know what the scene is, and basically anything else you want to talk about women in your sport. Who wants to start?
Well, I think I started last time, so I'd be happy to turn it over to Tom this time.
Tom.
Yo, okay. Okay. Well, I would say with the emergence of Ronda Rousey, and a potential mega fight with Chris Cyborg, I don't think the women have ever been more exciting at the MMA level, in the MMA world. The talent seems to be getting better. We're seeing a little more depth. And I remember, a couple years ago, Dana White had swore, no, well, women will never be in the UFC. But I'm kind of getting the feeling now that he's changing his mindset on that. And I think that if we can get Cyborg and Ronda in there, I think we'll see it. So I just don't think things have ever been better.
Okay, and I know we had discussed this a little bit last week. There's always been female boxing. You know, it was more of like a carnival attraction, you know, back in the 70s. Might even going back to the 60s, you'd have like one or two female fighters out there. Really didn't hear anything about it until in the 80s. What really piqued the interest in the 90s was the emergence of Christy Martin. And, you know, Don King had signed her, and just by, you know, the genius of Don King, he puts her on a female fight card, or he puts her on a female fight on the Mike Tyson Frank Bruno pay-per-view card, and Christy Martin and Deidre Dougherty, and we talked to Christy about this fight, steals the show. So now people, they had gotten interested in female fighting. Then you had the Mia St. John come in. She was like the Playboy girl, you know, just eyes strikingly beautiful. We've had Elena Baby Doll Reed, who was interviewed on the show, another strikingly beautiful girl who can fight. You have the Lucille Reichers out there. And then also then you have the biggest name probably out there was Layla Ali. You know, we have Ali Frazier, a legacy go on when Layla took on Jackie Frazier live, winning a unanimous decision. So, or a majority decision, I should say. So you had some good interest from the 90s up to most of the 2000s. I think that has waned a little bit. I haven't heard much recently. The last one I really heard of was a rematch between Christy Martin and Mia St. John, both in the 40s, as kind of a retirement fight for both, won by St. John. But right now, there isn't a whole lot on the mainstream scene of female fighting. Now, if you go down to some local fight cards, I know I've attended a few in Philadelphia where they've had female fights on the card, and some very good female fights on the card. Olivia Fonseca out of Philadelphia, I covered a couple of her fights, and it was funny, the way she had fought in her pro debut was a girl we ended up interviewing on the show like a year ago, and I'm like, I covered your professional debut against Olivia Fonseca, and she thought that was pretty cool. But you might catch a female fight here and there on a local card.
It's actually
right
more
now,
popular overseas, I think.
It is popular overseas, especially in Germany, with Gina Hamlet over there. But right now, I'm not seeing much on the mainstream, the big fights. I'm not seeing any female fights on any undercards of pay-per-views. So it is definitely almost like the fad has kind of passed a little bit that was going on for about, I think, 10 or so years.
I would say it was the late 90s. Things really started to pick up, and then you had, I believe, George Foreman's daughter was in there for a while. Frida, remember her?
Frida, yeah.
Frida Foreman, her name was. Yes. The fight with Chrissy Martin, and I had heard of Chrissy Martin, you know, just from reading boxing magazines, but the first fight was she made it onto, you know, the mainstream, you know, pay-per-view was on the undercard of Mike Tyson Frank Bruno, the rematch in March of 1996.
Right.
The one that stole the show for a while. Don King was putting a female fight on almost every card that he was putting on pay-per-view.
And then if you look at the ESPN's Friday night fights, we've seen quite a few women on them back at that time. Like, you know, I'm talking probably mid to late 90s going into the first couple years of the last decade. I remember we've seen Vonda Ward quite a bit. And Vonda in this area, you know, being from around here, she had quite a following. And then she ran into a right hand from Ann Wolf, and I just haven't heard much about her at all. So, Tony, you kind of used the word fad there about female fighting. You think that there was a fad element to it?
And that was for lack of a better word to use. And the reason I used that word is because of the fact that it had gotten so popular for such a time, and then kind of you don't see it much anymore. Anyway, I did not mention the Ward, and I did not mention Ann Wolf. Ann Wolf now, who was a very accomplished fighter.
For a little while.
Yes. A lot of people said she might have been the one that would have beaten Leila Ali. She's more known as a trainer now. And, yeah, I remember that that knockout that, because Von Wolf was a little bit, like 6'8", 6'9".
Yeah.
And that right hand that Ann Wolf.
Yeah, that was like Kim Burr.
Yeah.
One lady you have not mentioned yet, Tony, though, I think is the great hope for female boxing, and that's Clarissa Shields, the only gold medal.
17-year-old Olympian. Yeah, you got a point there. And you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. I did not mention the female boxing in the Olympics, and I apologize for that, because they gave the best showing in this year's Olympics. I am glad that they are getting recognized.
They're going to have more weight classes next year, too, thanks to that. So.
Yeah, that's good. Glad they got the opportunity to showcase themselves on the Olympic level. It's what's going to be hard. Okay, you take, and sadly, I'm forgetting most of the guys that were U.S. men's team in the Olympics already, which never happened during the days of, like, the De La Hoyas and Antonio Tarver and Floyd and, you know, Riddick Bowes and Ray Mercers and all those great fighters that I remember watching that grew up. You take your man, and I don't even remember his name right now, but you take the super heavyweight that comes out. He comes out and say, okay, you know, this guy's former Olympian. Just like Jason Estrada came out. Jason Estrada came out, he was a heavyweight, he was a former Olympian, and he was already building his pro record because he had a lot of places to go and a lot of people to fight. I think what's going to hurt people like Clarissa Shields is going to be the fact that, you know, there isn't going to be as much for her. Obviously she's got a name, she's got a pedigree, but it's not like she's going to have a lot of opportunities and a lot of opponents, not as much as a male would.
Right.
Yeah, very good point. Yeah. Very good point, because you have to be judged by the quality of your opponents. Well, what do you see turning it around, Tony, if anything?
Excuse me?
What do you see possibly turning it around and seeing if some of that momentum from the 90s can come back in women's boxing, or do you see that possibility?
Well, I mean, there's always a possibility. I think what the biggest thing has to be just with professional heavyweights, you need the superstar. What happened in the 90s was you had Chrissy Martin, who was a good fighter. I won't take that away from her, but she was like a female Gotti type of a fighter, like a female Arturo Gotti, not afraid to spill her own blood, and always going for the knockout. So people saw that and they were like, oh shit, I want to see her again. Women fight like this? Oh, damn. And then it was like, then other women picked up on it. And like I said, I went through it a few years ago, Olivia Fonseca from Philadelphia and Melissa St. Deal from New York. These two girls battled it to a draw. It was a slugfest, and they were getting a standing ovation. They stole the show that night. That was back, I think, around 2007. But it was the only female fight on the card. He had 8 fights, 7 were male, 1 was female. So obviously there's not as big of a group. There's not as many participants. And I think that hurt. But I think what you need is a superstar. You need someone to come out there. Why did Mike Tyson do great pay-per-view ratings back in his heyday? Because it was like, oh, shit, yeah, I got to see this because it's an event. And watching Chris Martin fight, to a lesser degree, was like an event because it was a battle. All of her fights were. They need somebody that can capture that imagination and get both male and female viewers to want to watch.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, the superstars that are out there, they're alone in their division. You know, there's no big group in every division that can fight each other a bunch of times in boxing. But I think fighting in general for women on both levels of MMA and boxing is going to improve because, number one, you had the Clarissa Shields medal, and also you got a lot more women wrestling now, which is a high school sport, you know. And a lot of kids don't box in high school, but, you know, a lot of high schools will allow women wrestling now or have their own teams now, which when I wrestled, you know, you couldn't even imagine that. You were just, you know, first seeing women come in and go, geez, I don't think this lady's going to last, you know, and they still have them fighting men, maybe wrestling men. So now it's a whole new level. And I think MMA's kind of trying to keep boxing on its toes in that respect because I think you got a lady like Ronda Rousey and you have now a whole league Invicta doing women fighting. And it's come a long way since Gina Carano on Strikeforce. You know, Gina versus Julie Kedzie was the first big female fight that I watched. And now you can see them everywhere, but it's just not up to the UFC level.
Yeah, and I think at some of the lower levels, like some of the shows I'll go to around here with the NAFS, when we have Jessica I get in there, she has more fans than a lot of the guys do. I mean, she gets the crowd going, and she's very very aggressive, very exciting, and I mean, I don't mean to be making short of my end of the deal. We're talking more about boxing, but it just seems like things are going in such a good direction with the women that I don't really need to add a whole lot. I mean, it's just, at all levels, the big ones, you know, all of them.
The only, you know, Dana White, if he's right about anything, he's right about the depth of female MMA. It's not quite big enough yet to have the UFC support it. But, you know, if they had all the money in the world to throw at some of these women or buy out Invicta completely, you know, they could do it if they wanted to. But I just think they've got so over-leveraged right now. And they're having a difficult period of growth here. They're still growing, but it's, like, stagnant in a lot of ways because they keep having these same issues bite them in the ass with injuries. And they had one card canceled in Strikeforce and the UFC this year. So it's just not good financial fact to be buying up another league at this point. But, you know, give Ronda a couple more fights in there to really turn people onto it, and a lot more women will be coming out trying to do it. You know, you think about back in, like, the 1800s when a woman couldn't go out without wearing a dress down to her ankles. How far women have come that they're fighting now, just like men, on the same card as men, sometimes in main events. And it happens in MMA and boxing, mostly overseas, but it's happening
now. Well, I'll
tell
you, if Ronda and Cyborg can go at it next year, I think that has mega potential, the way I see it. I mean, that is a fight a lot of people want to see. Exactly. A lot of people want to see that fight.
I definitely do. But, you know, Rousey's an Olympian too, so maybe that is something. The amateur level of fighting in all the different disciplines you're either going to boxing or MMA, and all those fighting sports that are Olympic sports. So it's definitely good to see some more female stars coming out. We had Misha Tate on not too long ago from MMA. The MMA side, we haven't had a female boxer on since Christy, but we had Misha Tate, who had just fought Ronda and just recovered with her arm injury. So she's a tough girl. I'd love to see fight again any day.
Oh yeah, I mean I wouldn't count her out in a rematch. I mean, I know that Ronda would have to be the favorite, but I think Misha's a live body, so we'll see how that goes if she gets the chance. And
yeah,
apparently Ronda called out Brian Caraway. Did you hear about that?
No.
Yeah, Ronda was asked if there were any male fighters that she'd like to get in the cage with, and she specifically called out Misha's boyfriend, Brian Caraway. Said, "I'll just run.
Really?
I'll run the table on the whole household." Oh, jeez.
Well, it was funny because Ronda was on one of the episodes of The Ultimate Fighter. It was last season, and she had a real tough time, like, getting people to talk to her at the fighter house.
I noticed that. I was wondering if it was we had a whole gay household there. You know, kind of scratching my head, saying, "Jeez, what's going on here, guys?" You know, I mean, it's not like she's going to bite you. Jeez.
Yeah.
That was unusual. That was very unusual.
But anyway, yeah, it's definitely guys in both sports. I think MMA might be a little bit ahead in that game of attracting more females to the sport, especially American females that are recognizable. But they're also losing them too. I mean, you look at Gina Carano. She's on her second movie now. She's going to be in the female version of The Expendables. So that's kind of interesting that you can't throw enough money at them to keep fighting like that. But we still don't know what happened with her, too. That's another interesting story. Nobody got to the bottom of. You know, her last fight that she was supposed to have in Strikeforce, she just said it was canceled for a medical reason. We never found out why.
I would say that Gina is still very young, and never say never. I mean, she's got plenty of time to get back again.
It's going to be her next movie. Never say never.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely on the upswing, I think. It'll be a few years before maybe you get women to the UFC level, but it'll happen. And in boxing, if you give Clarissa Shields a little time to marinate, you know, people kind of forget that, you know, they kept saying the story was no male boxer won a gold for the United States or any medal, I think, right? That medal is the first Olympics in a long time, and but the women won one. So, you know, that goes a long way to create little wannabe kids out there who want to do the same thing. So, I think there's hope. Anyway. We got a little boxing card here I wanted to mention in the Philippines. But it's a pretty well-matched card here. I want to mention a couple fights, the 3 12-rounders here. We got Ray Batista, who's 33-2 with 25 knockouts as a featherweight, fighting Daniel Ruiz, who's 27-5-1 with 19 knockouts. That's for the vacant WBO International featherweight title. And we got a couple guys with only one loss on this card also. Bantamweight's A.J. Benal, 28-1-1 with 20 knockouts, and Tung Luang Soa Sengkyu, who's 42-1 with 27 knockouts. And then finally we have the heavyweights on this card, or actually light welterweights. Jason Pagara, who's 29-2, fighting Miguel Antoine, who's 17-0-1, 9 knockouts. That's for the WBO International Light Welterweight title. But if you're in the Philippines this weekend, you can see that one. And there's also a pretty interesting British card going on Saturday in the United Kingdom. We get welterweights Kell Brook, 28-0, 18 knockouts, fighting Hector David Saldivia, who's 41-2 with 32 knockouts. And interesting little super middleweight fight on here, veteran versus young gun here, Robin Reed, who's 42-7-1 with 29 knockouts, fighting Kenny Anderson, who's 17-1 for the BBBFC British super middleweight title. So, if you're across the pond this weekend, watch Kell Brook. That's actually one of the guys that Ricky Hatton has mentioned he'd like to fight eventually. Which is interesting since he's just getting back to the sport. He's already talking tough. What else we got? You guys got any nuggets to add? Any big news?
Oh, I was noticing that for Philadelphia here coming, let's see, when is it? There's a Ray Mancini movie, The Good Son, the story of Ray Boom Boom Mancini. And this is, screenings are scheduled for Friday, October 19th, 2:40 p.m. at the Bourse Theater, 400 Ranstead Street in Philadelphia. And then Sunday, October 21st, 12:05 at the Rave Theater 6, 4012 Walnut Street, Philadelphia. And then Wednesday, October 24th, back at the Bourse, 400 Ranstead Street. And the intro says, this tells the story of Ray's rise from the steel city of Youngstown, Ohio, to the lights of Las Vegas. It is a tale of fathers and sons, struggle and triumph, heartache and love, compassion and forgiveness. The documentary is an emotional compilation of interviews with Ray Mancini and individuals who have influenced his life, including Ed O'Neill, Mickey Rourke, Sugar Ray Leonard, and Jiwon Kim, whose father, Duk Koo Kim, tragically lost his life in the ring with Ray Mancini. So if you get the chance, Tony, wow, you're there. Give us a report.
Okay.
Mancini. That kind of reminds me of that nickname, one of those ones like Dangerous Dana Rosenblatt. You know, you just saw Vinny Paz. We're at the Rocky Marciano statue dedication, and one of the favorite parts of that interview with Vinny that we did on the show is when he said, "He ain't so dangerous, he's a douchebag." funny. Dangerous Dana's not so dangerous, according to Vinny.
He had a pretty heated rivalry with Roberto Duran, and they became such good friends after the rivalry that, you know, he was like, "Yeah, I came out to Duran's 50th birthday party, and you know, he was there. He was like, he walked me out to the ring for my last fight, and he's like, and I'm like, yeah, I know you had some problems with Greg Hagen, like, what about Dana Rosenblatt? He's like, well, fuck that asshole." I guess
there's
some legit
heat
on that one.
Yeah, we touched the nerve there.
Yeah.
That was funny. He was actually one of the guys that really hung out after that ceremony there and stayed in the park and talked to people. He was kind of a very down-to-earth guy. And anyway. Barely hearing you.
I was a fan for a lot of years, but the one really cool thing that impressed me a couple years ago was when I met him at the fight card, gave him my card with my phone number on it, asked him to do a radio show. He called me to book it, and he was cool like that. And then, you know, obviously did the show with us. And then a year or so later, you know, when I wanted to get my dad a good Christmas gift, and I called him up, and he's like, "Yeah, here's my home address. If you can get a copy of the book," he's like, "I don't have an e-copy. Here's my home address. Ship it to me. Give me your address. I'll sign it for your dad and ship it back." And he did. And I'm like, that's going way above and beyond, you know, what you got to do. You know, if you write something on the man's Facebook page, almost within an hour you have a response.
That's cool.
Yeah, you don't get that out of a lot of, you know, like professional athletes. and a lot of, you know, like megastars these days.
And it was kind of funny that he had the rivalry with Roberto Duran, because from the stands, I thought he was Roberto Duran because he didn't take his hat off for the national anthem. Looking at him from behind, and he had one of those weird hats. Like a paper ball hat, you know. It was kind of weird. Weird looking from the stands anyway. And I actually told my friend, yeah, that's Roberto Duran down there. With Vinny Pass. But I wouldn't make that mistake up close. Just because I saw, actually, I did meet Roberto Duran out in Vegas. And he carries an entourage with him wherever he goes. He does not speak English still to this day. And I tried to hand him a car, and this big black dude was like, I'll take that. Roberto is funny. Anyway, we got a few more MMA fights I wanted to mention before we sign off for the night. Super Fight League 5 going on in Mumbai, India on Friday. DEDP 60 Impact in Tokyo, Japan. There's still Japanese MMA out there going on Friday. Score Fighting Series 6 in Ontario, Canada, also Friday. And, of course, we have Bellator back. Bellator Fighting Championships 77 from Reading, Pennsylvania. How far is Reading from you, Tony?
Reading, I'll say, is probably about an hour, hour and a half.
All right. Well, it's at the Sovereign Center in Reading. That's Reading. I don't even know how to pronounce this one, but over in the Philippines, we got an MMA card, Bacalao de Brawl 4. Even going on in South Africa, EFC Africa, Extreme Fighting Championships, the Carnival City Casino and Entertainment World in Gauteng. Some card going on Friday. And Saturday, we got a few events, Big Cage Ostrava 2 in the Czech Republic. Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Nitro 7 in Queensland, Australia. These are all on Saturday. Explosion from Southend, England, UWC 21. And King of the Cage, still going, in Nevada. Laughlin, Nevada, the Edgewater Casino. Future Legends 10, Saturday. And another fight in Brazil, JVT Championship 3. We even got MMA at the Fit Fun Fight Sports Center in Prüm, Germany. We got the Contender 6 put on by Kiru. And another fight in Brazil on Saturday, Predator FC 22, PFC. Empire Promotions also in Brazil, Empire FC on Saturday. NAAF S Caged Vengeance 12. Streetsboro, Ohio. Rogue Fights 20 Fists of Fire in Redding, California. WBFN also on Saturday. Wild Bill's Fight Night 50 from Atlanta, Duluth, Georgia. Wild Bill's Atlanta, Duluth, Georgia. I don't even know which is supposed to be the town, Atlanta or Duluth. That's written weird. Anyway. A few fights on Sunday. Of course, we start off in Tokyo, SWAT 48. And then we got Unstoppable from Slovenia on Sunday. And then Gate Challenge 10 from Aichi. Teng Tai Chi Super Fight 13 from Okinawa. And finally, Second to None from Los Angeles, California. U of MMA. And that's all we got. Till next week. Thanks for listening, folks. Shout out to our sponsors, Cocaine Energy Drink and Milafidel, milafidel.com. And that's about all I got. We'll have guests next week.
Remember, I'm not available next Thursday, so if you want me to do a pre-record, I can do that anytime during the week.
Okay.
So if you want
can we pre-record some questions for you to ask our guests?
Yeah.
That'll be funny.
I mean, but you should. I'm going to give you a list of questions. Of course, each one we do, like, a recap of the fight or anything like that. You know, we can set up a board maybe a half hour to an hour and do, like, a tape segment and maybe start to chill with that.
Well, now that I know how to disconnect Skype from Facebook, that will go smoothly. So.
Okay, good.
And we can get two guests if we need them for next week.
All right, well, I'll send you an email and we'll work out a schedule for at least me to at least do a pre-record.
All righty. There's our warning.
All right, well, I'm out.
Adios.
People, I'll still leave.
Thanks for stopping by.
All right, guys, let's enjoy the fights this weekend wherever we can see them, huh?
All right, okay. Down to the top.